Hello and thank you for tuning into Sideline Story, your destination for sports news, analysis, and discussions. I'm your host, Brandon Yates, and as always, I'm joined by my two fantastic co-hosts, Yang Guang and Tian Yu, and we are back onto the Formula One subject, but this particular week, we are focusing on something very special, the return of the Shanghai Grand Prix and the return of Formula One to China. Zhou Guan Yu is the first Chinese Formula One driver to be competing in China at the Shanghai Grand Prix, which is an incredible achievement in its own. Yang Guang, we've mentioned the return of the Chinese Grand Prix. It does come back after a three-year hiatus. It's also the 20th anniversary of the Chinese Grand Prix. When you look back at some of the historical moments that we've witnessed at the Shanghai Grand Prix, are there any standouts for you?
To me, the most memorable experience must be the 2018 race. It was the first time I went to report on an F1 race, and I was totally stunned. The sound of the engine, I mean, the electric atmosphere, the post-race press conference room.
Yeah, I think people also don't realize how fast those cars and how loud they are until you actually see it. You know, witnessing it on TV, and you know, the cameras are basically keeping up with the cars, and you don't really get the best sense of how quickly these cars move. But I mean, seeing it in person must have been incredible.
Yeah, like when you come across the normal cars on the street, the sound of normal cars, multiply that with 100 times, it's Formula One.
Yeah, and I think efforts have actually been made to even reduce the sound of Formula One cars. Mm. So I don't know when that took place, but I think you got the reduced version. But I mean, even with that, still like just a noise that is, you know, it can't be compared to anything else.
It pumps everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And the chances when you are steps away, listening to top drivers like Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel speaking, man, it was wow. Like a dream weekend for
Envy
me.
You, man.
And also seeing how small they are in person. You don't realize they're these, you know, towering figures. But when you actually see them in person, and it makes sense because obviously, you know, you want your car to be as light and nimble and dynamic as possible. So it makes sense that the drivers are tiny.
Tiny might be
a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. It's too much.
I mean, compared to rugby players, I mean, I'm from South Africa. So when I see some of the national players in person, they're like 6'8", 120 kilograms. So I guess compared to some of those guys, they might be a little bit tiny.
Yeah. When
but any human would be.
But the first time experience something magnificent, like the first sight of Manhattan, the first trip to the Forbidden City, the freshness and excitement it creates, you won't forget that feeling the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I still remember Daniel Ricciardo won that year's race on the podium.
Man with the beaming smile. Yes.
He drank champagne from his shoe, his signature celebration
style. No wonder he was smiling. He's probably a little bit drunk.
Yeah, a lot of memories are pouring in now. I remember after the first test race, there was a press conference held by team principals. And it's my first time to be that occasion. Mm. And I asked Ferrari's Maurizio Arrivabini a very stupid question. I asked him,
and what was that?
What's Ferrari's race strategy this weekend? How many pit stops will you have? Everyone, including other team principals and the journalists, turned back and stared at me and laughed. It's like he would tell me in front of his opponents and in public, Ferrari's confidential race plan. It was super embarrassing. The minute I went back to my hotel room, I punched my head.
Oh no!
Stupid question.
But you know what? It would have been
first time.
But it also would have been a very great opportunity for Maurizio to like make a joke. He could have said like, "Oh, we're not planning any pit stops. We're going to try and come last." But you know, just to try and throw his opponents. Yeah.
But he was very nice. He did answer my question by saying something, you know, about the driver's feeling about the Shanghai circuit and their general preparation for the race, something like that.
At least he answered the question, because I think in the past, I mean, I won't mention names, but when Yang Guang and I went to the Asian Games and we interviewed some foreign coaches, we had some not so nice characters respond to us when we ask them, you know, detailed question, which I guess is understandable. I mean, you know, look, most of these team principals and athletes, they don't particularly want to talk to the press. So I think they're always kind of like not in the greatest mood when they do speak to the press, unless they've just won a race or a match or something. But even then, they're exhausted usually. So I think you have to be super careful what you do ask these guys. But that being said, you know, it doesn't take much effort to just, you know, respond kindly or just, you know, show some humility, even if you are asked a question that you don't particularly want to answer, particularly if the journalist is being polite, which if I know Yang Guang, he was being extremely polite. So it's great to hear that even though, you know, other people weren't particularly happy with the question, at least he was kind to you.
Yeah, he was. And also that year, I was at the time disoriented at the paddock and accidentally enter a team's VIP lounge.
Accidentally. Yeah. I just accidentally took some caviar and champagne. Sorry, guys.
And suddenly two guards ran from nowhere towards me stopped me from the entrance and very gently spoke to me. Sir, this area is not accessible. I think in their mind, they must be like, what you doing? Get lost. Get out of here.
Just to stop you there. I would have said, excuse me, I'm a Chinese dignitary. I'm the Minister of Sport, the Deputy Minister. I've just been appointed. You don't know me. Let me in. That would have been my approach. Although I probably would have been banned from re-entering China again, but at least I would have had a VIP experience.
Yeah, sounds something like that I would do. But I did return the following year, 2019 race. That time I was super professional, not asking
you're
stupid
always
questions.
Come on, you're always professional, but it's just your first time. You were bound to make one or two mistakes.
Yeah, not going into restricted areas. I still remember the 2019 race was the 1,000th Formula One race in history.
That's right. Yeah.
Actually, a lot of countries bid to host that milestone race, and the UK, Japan, Australia, but Formula One allocated that berth to China.
What an honor.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what, you know, regardless of how long the Shanghai Grand Prix or the, you know, just the Grand Prix being in China, however long that lasts, which we're hoping will last for many years to come, just to have that moment in Formula One sporting history is amazing.
Yeah. It just showed how Formula One values the Chinese market.
Exactly.
So they must be happy to welcome back the Chinese Grand Prix this year.
And the circuit too, I suppose, because we have seen over the course of many years, 20 as we now know, there is something about that Shanghai track that really does deliver some drama and exciting moments as we've seen over the years. Tianyu, any that come to mind for you when you look over the 20-year history?
Yeah, for me, I would say the most unforgettable Chinese Grand Prix would be the 2006 edition, where Michael Schumacher got the last race win of his career.
Oh, man. And, I mean, look, I know he's, you know, I mean, I don't even know what's happening in terms of his health status. And, you know, it's just been such a tragic time for Formula One fans and, of course, for Michael himself and just the Schumacher family. But, you know, I try and reserve that feeling of sadness and look back at these moments, like you've just mentioned now, that final win with happiness, because obviously, we are hoping for Michael to pull through and for his health issues to be behind him and for, you know, for good things to return to the Schumacher family. But regardless of what happens there, you know, just looking over the course of Schumacher's career, there have been so many moments of joy and moments that we're going to be remembering that he provided as a driver while he was still competing.
Yeah.
And that win in 2006 was definitely one of them.
Yeah, it's really memorable also because it was a really intense game. It was raining in Shanghai, and the raining road suited better for Michelin rather than Bridgestone tires, which Ferrari was using then. And the Red Baron started from the sixth place. And at the beginning of the race, it was Fernando Alonso who charged clear on a wet Shanghai track. And after 13 laps, Alonso was over 16 seconds ahead of second place McLaren.
Which, to put it into perspective, you know, for people that aren't particularly familiar with Formula One and, you know, time gaps and that kind of thing, a 16-second lead in Formula One is like literally it's like lapping a runner in an 800-meter race. It's a massive lead.
Yeah. While Schumacher was just fought his way past Jenson Button's Hondas, and he was fourth.
Oh, I'm remembering all of these names and all of these great drivers.
It makes me back, right?
I'm getting nostalgia, but I'm also feeling really old.
You're still young, man.
Yeah.
And he was like with over 25 seconds adrift of the leading Alonso. And at that time, Schumacher had its very tight season battle with Alonso. And it seems like just as another wing seemed in the back for Alonso, it's all started to go wrong.
Mm. The German track said, nine!
Yeah.
It's my time now!
Yeah, as the track steadily dried and the intermediate tires began to bulge, Schumacher started to overtake his rivals.
Which he's never done before. I mean, we're so not used to seeing Schumacher dominate a race.
And Giancarlo Fisichella did stand a chance of stopping Schumacher, but Ferrari's perfect timing on a switch to slicks left him with no chance.
Yeah, what a classic race.
Yeah.
Just listen to this description, because I didn't watch that race.
Yeah, and also slicks in the wet. Woo, you've got to be a real pro driver to be handling that. But yeah, I mean, I think over the course of the years watching Schumacher race, there were quite a few seasons and races where it looked like things could happen that weren't necessarily in Schumacher's favor. And I'm talking about when he was in his prime, you know, with Ferrari and all of that. But there were also so many seasons where it was just, you know, before the race began, we knew that Schumacher was going to win. But that's something memorable about that particular race. Like you mentioned, the rivalry that season between Alonso and Schumacher, and also just things going any way, and to have that drama and that final win in China, in Shanghai. I mean, yeah, I think that's going to be remembered by Formula One fans for a long time.
Yeah.
And another moment that I think was pretty significant in terms of Formula One and, you know, memorable moments created in Shanghai, and something that led to what we're experiencing today was the emergence of Max Verstappen. If you look back at that 2015 race, when he was still a very young, talented, but kind of raw, rough driver.
Rookie, exactly.
But it was still that Verstappen where, it's not the Verstappen we see today where he's polished and, you know, he doesn't really provide too many emotional interviews and doesn't drive particularly brashly. You know, we're seeing a very polished version of Max Verstappen now that's just dominating everybody. But back then, he was very raw. And I think that race in particular, where we saw him just deliver some incredible overtaking moves and show a combination of skill and bravery that's kind of started the formation of the Max Verstappen that we're seeing now. And that all happened in Shanghai in 2015. I think that was a very significant moment for the Formula One races and history that we're currently seeing unfold.
People would predict Verstappen would now dominate Formula One, the sport.
I mean, I never... Look, I thought that he would go on to have a very successful career, which he is having, but I never expected him to dominate the way he is doing it now.
Because like winning all the races.
Yeah, I just thought the likes of Ferrari, Mercedes, and, you know, all of these constructors would somehow find a way to keep up. But honestly, now I think I don't even have a driver's license, but I think if they even put me into that Red Bull, I'd probably do okay. I would just put my foot down and kind of start steering. And I think, honestly, that car is just so light years above the others I think any, you know, able-sighted driver could do okay. Which is pretty, but not to take away from Verstappen's skill and, you know, dominance. But he's also very fortunate to be in an unbelievable car. Look, Zhou Guanyu. I mean, first Chinese Formula One driver back on his home circuit in Shanghai. You know, this is just an incredible moment for Zhou Guanyu and just for Chinese motorsports. But Yang Huang, what does this mean to, you know, Chinese motorsports, Formula One in China, and potentially the future of motorsports as a whole in China?
Yeah, it means a lot. I still remember in 2018 and 2019 when I reported on the Chinese Grand Prix, Chinese fans were wearing jerseys of Ferrari, Mercedes, Renault. Many fans were chanting Kimi Raikkonen's name.
My dad was too. My dad loves Kimi Raikkonen. The Iceman.
Apparently, Raikkonen was the most popular and the most liked Formula One driver then in China. But this time, there's only one name to chant. Zhou Guanyu receives the biggest support ever in his professional career.
As it should be.
Yeah. Zhou Guanyu actually watched the inaugural Chinese Grand Prix 20 years ago.
Yeah.
From the stand. He recalled that race was the reason he decided to take the path to become a professional driver.
It's got
to
be a movie, right? We have to see a movie where Zhou Guan Yu, you know, watched that first race 20 years ago, and then 20 years later, he is a Formula One driver from China racing in China. I mean, if someone told you that that was a fairy tale, like created by Disney or whatever, you would believe it. It doesn't seem like that is a reality. And yet, here we are in 2024, and it's a reality.
Yeah,
indeed. Boom, 20 years later, he returned to the circuit, not as a fan, but as a driver on the grid. I believe there are many kids that watch the Shanghai race this time, just like how Joe started his connection with Formula One, and how many of them would become professional drivers in the future.
That's the biggest impact for me when I see Chinese stars emerging in international sports and becoming stars in their own right. When you think of the vastness of China's population and all of the economic developments and, you know, all of the growth of China, when you have these standout teams or individuals representing China, the impact that it could potentially have on that sport's future is so big. Mm. We won't necessarily see it now, but I think Zhou Guan Yu's influence on young Chinese sports fans, we may be, who knows what the future holds for the future of Chinese drivers in Formula One. I think of the likes of Zhang Qinwen in tennis and Li Na and people like that. Who knows what that can possibly lead to for China's potential dominance in that sport in the future, just because of their influence and also just because of the size and strength of China. Yeah.
Just look how many kids played basketball after Yao Ming entered the NBA. I was one of them.
Yeah.
How many kids played football after China entered the FIFA World Cup in 2002. Just I think it's the similar case here with Zhou Guan Yu.
And possibly greater, because it's an individual sport and, you know, it's one of the most prestigious sports on the planet. And also, there's so few selected tracks globally. And the fact that there is now this first Chinese Formula One driver racing in a Chinese race.
Yeah, that was...
That combined influence, I think, is going to be absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And from another perspective, I mean, for car racing, China may not be the biggest market at this stage. But China certainly has become a big power in car manufacturing, especially electric cars. Mm. China was the biggest car exporter in 2023. It's becoming a car factory globally. Mm. No one can underestimate China's development in cars.
Dominating the EV market too, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Elon.
I think it's just a matter of time that China enters the car racing spotlight because partially races like Formula One are also serving as a technical experiment room for big brands like Audi, for Ferrari.
And they're also in a race, excuse the pun, to achieve net zero by 2030. And when you think of the advancements being made in the car industry in China, I think that's also a massive goal of that market. And it seems like China's leading that market at the moment. So with those combined efforts, the future looks potentially very bright. I think we're going to see a Chinese constructor in Formula One much sooner than we actually expect. Mm-hmm. Tianyu, from your side of things, I mean, we've spoken about the significance of, you know, the Shanghai Grand Prix and Zhou Guan Yu and all of these elements. What's your take?
Well, I think it definitely means a lot to both Zhou Guan Yu himself and to the sport of motorsports in China. For Zhou Guan Yu himself, it is definitely a meaningful moment. As Yang Guang said, he started his dream of becoming a race driver from watching the Chinese Grand Prix 20 years ago when he was 5 years old. So being able to race in Shanghai, his hometown, must feel like his dream come true. And for motorsports in China, we've talked about how important it is for a country to have a native sports figure competing at the international stage. And Zhou Guan Yu competing in the Shanghai Grand Prix was certainly bring more attention
it's
and
huge.
Focus from China, from Chinese people onto this sport. He has already got multiple like business endorsement contracts with like different brands.
Must be nice.
Yeah. And he has even got a movie hitting the screen recently.
Of course he does.
Telling about his experience of being an F1 driver.
I'm jealous, I'm jealous.
So with these publicity, with these attention, I think an increasing number of people will start to follow Zhou Guan Yu and naturally follow sports of racing and F1.
I mean, look, I say I'm jealous, but with that in mind, the pressure that all of this brings, it's particularly like to Zhou Guanyu. Yeah, it's just, it's huge. It's pride, it's pressure, it's finances. There's so many things for him to keep in mind. And Yang Guang, things haven't also, you know, with all of that, with everything that we've discussed, most of it away from the track, looking at his results over the season, how are things standing for Zhou Guanyu? Because at the end of the day, if we're hoping that he remains in Formula One, the number one factor is probably going to be his performances, right?
Yeah. Realistically speaking, I still think there's a long way to go for Zhou Guanyu. He and the Sauber team haven't been much of an impact so far this season. But it's not just about Zhou. I mean, Sauber as a team made some mistakes, which led to some disappointing results.
Good point.
For both Zhou and teammate Valtteri Bottas. There were a few times that Zhou was close to 10th position on the track and earning points, but it was either too much time wasted from the pit stops or mechanical problems that failed Zhou from breaking into the top 10.
Mm.
Bottas as well. I think there's still room for improvement for the Sauber team this season. I'm counting on Zhou to stand on the podium someday, but I do hope he can keep consistent in the mid-table race.
Yeah. I think it's very early days in the season, and also just for Zhou Guanyu's career. And well, I mean, not thankfully, but I suppose from Zhou Guanyu's side, it does potentially benefit his career if a lot of the disappointing results that he's had have not all been on his shoulders. If it's kind of like a shared issue. So maybe going into the future, there could be also shared efforts between him and Sauber, who are soon to become Audi, to sort things out and hopefully have a prosperous future together. But Tianyu, when you look at Zhou Guanyu's season and his potential future in the sport, what are your thoughts?
He didn't score a point before the Shanghai race this season.
Yeah.
But considering the car that he drives, I think he's totally understandable. Because, you know, after losing their sponsor, Alfa Romeo, Sauber was like on a way of tanking. They don't have extra money to improve their cars. I think it was in the Australian race when Zhou Guanyu was taking a small turn during the race, a part of his car flew off from the body.
Yeah.
And that was
inexcusable.
Yeah. And last season, they were like at the 9th place in the constructor standings. It was 3 places down on the previous campaign. And with Audi set to take over at the team in 2026,
right.
I don't think they're motivated enough to seek to improve from their current situation. And I think if Zhou can't achieve major breakthroughs this season, I think it's very likely that he will get replaced in the coming year. And my only hope for him is that he can gain some points in later races and maybe gain a contract with the likes of Haas.
Yeah, I mean, with that in mind, I mean, we've mentioned a couple of constructors, and we've also mentioned that there's a few spots available for a number of teams. And also, you know, there is potentially the return of Sebastian Vettel, who Yang Guang has been a fantastic champion in Formula One, a fantastic character. I've always found him to be one of those figures in Formula One that, of course, has a lot of success, but he also brings kind of a lightness, and, you know, he brings a lot of character and intrigue, I think, to the sport, because he is quite an interesting, dynamic character, as well as being a very talented driver, and he may be returning. And do you think his return is a good thing for Formula One, and could that threaten some other Formula One drivers and potentially even Zhou Guanyu?
To be honest, I'm not quite optimistic about his return. I think he would struggle on the track, facing the likes of Max Verstappen, George Russell, Norris, you know, the new generation forces in the sport now. A few drivers came out of retirement going back to the race in the past, but most of the return journey wasn't that successful. Michael Schumacher, Fernando Alonso, and even Daniel Ricciardo. I'm not sure Vettel will get his prime days back unless he's offered a seat at teams like Red Bull, which is highly unlikely to happen.
And I also think when these great drivers return that have previously had so much success, I'm not really sure what motivates them. I think it's quite a difficult thing for someone that was very successful in any sport to manage, where if you're sitting at home and you've had this incredible career, but then you also feel like you have more to give, but you also know that you probably can't reach the heights that you've previously reached. I think that's quite a difficult balancing act for athletes to figure out. That particular development should be very interesting to see, as well as the future of Chinese motorsport, particularly when you look at the likes of Formula One. When are we going to see a Chinese constructor? How many potential Formula One drivers from China will we see in the future? And will we ever see a Chinese Formula One champion? Remains to be seen, but I have high hopes. But that is all we have time for on this week's episode of Sideline Story. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, we will be back next week with our latest topic, and we'll see you then.